I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. It's Halloween, and so I am working today with the gruesome Father Garrett and the dreadful Father Drew.
That's about right.
When it comes to like the name of the podcasting studio, do you know what you get when you Google the patron saint of Halloween? Type that in. What do you think comes up?
Saint Odillo.
Ooh, I like that. It would have been good. You're more helpful than Google already.
Who's Saint Odillo?
Is that not right? Who's the guy who, who's the big All Souls Day guy?
Well, I don't know.
This is something.
I thought there was a guy, I'm thinking of like Gertrude.
No, I think Odillo sounds dumb. Now I feel dumb.
I think you're thinking Odillo of Lord of the Rings and one of the companion dwarves.
Saint Odillo of Cluny. became the most important monastery. Oh, Odillo actively worked out.
I wish listeners could see the excitement on your face when that popped up.
He also promoted the truce of God. I don't know what that is. Okay, he established All Souls Day in Cluny and its monasteries on the annual commemoration to pray for the faithful departed. The practice was soon adopted through the whole Western Church.
Well, if it were November 2nd, he'd be great. Oh, but it's October, you know, Halloween 31st. Is, right?
Who's the patron saint of Halloween, Chad?
Well, according to Dr. Google, Pumpkin King Jack Skellington is what comes up from
my guy.
Which, when I read that, just filled me with sort of an anger that how dare they try and take that over. So I am naming the studio today the studio of Saint Boniface, the smasher of paganism, who went into Germany and chopped down that pagan tree to prove a point.
Yeah.
And so, take that, Jack Skellington. We are in the studio of Saint Boniface.
The Thunder Oak of Geismar or something like
that. That's right.
Not
quite right. Yeah.
But I think that's...
I think it was called the Thunder Oak. I think
that's
you're right.
Lord of the Rings either.
That's right.
I think it was to Thor. I think it was like Norse god Thor, but they called it the Thunder Oak.
Thunder Oak. Which is another good
That'd be a great nickname. Yeah.
The Thunder Oak would be like some big, like Cole Aldrich could have been nicknamed the Thunder Oak if he had been better in the NBA. It's a KU basketball reference. But
So that was the face of recognition.
Call me that. I chopped down a tree one time.
You did not.
Yeah. One time at Mundelein, Father Michael Kirsch and I, we were just bored one night. We were like, you want to go chop down a tree?
That's a felony.
I think it was pretty small, honestly.
It took us
way too long.
I was working a cattle ranch one summer and got a chainsaw cut in a tree. We were trying to cut fence posts and we'd never cut a tree down with a chainsaw before. And we cut the angle wrong and so the tree fell over and just jammed the blade in there.
Oh no.
It was me and Chris Jacks.
Okay.
Yeah. Working about right.
And we then spent the next 40 minutes just blaming each other of whose fault it was that we had this broken chainsaw stuck in the tree before we actually, it all worked out in the end.
What's Chris, we need to see Chris Jacks again.
You see him Friday night if you go.
I know. I could see him easily. And I saw him at Mass the other day, but I just don't ever see Chris Jacks anymore.
I miss you.
Shout out to Chris Jacks.
He's in part of my old man's nights group that gets together once a month.
Tell him I said hey.
I will do that. So moving on past destroyer of paganism, Saint Boniface. So it's Halloween on the day at least this comes out. Some people are like Halloween fanatics. Where do you guys fall in? Where does Halloween rank in listing of holidays?
Last.
Yeah, pretty low. Yeah. I wouldn't even say last, but 3 out of 10 maybe.
Three out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking like Arbor Day and stuff like that, but if we're in the sense,
obviously that is in the running.
No, that's last. But it's like, I think almost any other holiday does more for me than Halloween of any of the other major holidays.
At this stage in my life, I feel pretty indifferent to Halloween. As a kid, it was pretty high up there.
Yeah, I agree. You didn't like dressing up in a costume and trick-or-treating?
Because I got a jersey. I could usually...
You were one of those kids, weren't you? Every year, the same thing.
It's just a different...
Different Dallas Cowboys player.
Don't with me. But yeah, I am not a Halloween guy at all. I'm not a big Halloween guy.
Yeah, anymore I'm not. As a kid, now I look back at as a kid, I was kind of a creative kid.
And so I always had big visions for my costume and wanted to make it myself. So my costumes were really terrible. Like, nobody ever knew what I was because I was...
That's an example.
I don't know. I, like, what would it have been? Like, I don't... I probably was, like, an elf, or, like, I was Caesar one... I remember getting made fun of in, like, fifth grade because I dressed up as Julius Caesar because I had read a book about him as a battle general, and so I made my own costume to be Julius Caesar. Okay. Nobody knew who I was. Okay. And even when I told them, nobody was impressed by...
You got no candy trick-or-treating that year.
That's funny.
Halloween was rough for me. So, those were some of the bad costumes. What were some of your best costumes as a kid? Like, what would be your best remembered costume that you ever had? Or as an adult?
Freshman year of college.
You're not. All right, let's do this.
We and two of our roommates are guys on our floor at the dorm dressed up as the Channel 4 news team from Anchorman.
Nice.
We went to Goodwill the day of or the day before and just got, like, cheap suits, and we dressed up like Channel 4 news team. And then we took them back.
We did take, and nothing else. Wait. There's no more to that story.
You bought clothes from the Goodwill and took them back.
Yeah. And I think, in honor of St. Odilo, like, on the second, we took them back.
Did you take them back as in you gave a donation to Goodwill, or you went and got a refund?
We are
the lowest of the low.
I think we spilled something on it too. Oh, I remember. I'm sure that we did. If I remember right, it was.
That is.
Yeah, it wasn't a our level highest of moment, trashy I'm aware. That. Well, we dressed up as a Will Ferrell character. We weren't exactly living in high class. Oh, boy. Yeah, that wasn't our best work.
Not our best. This last year, I had maybe one of my costumes I was most proud of, because I don't want to dress up. I'll just wear my clerics. But so I'm trying to, like, find a father pun or something like that. Mm-hmm. But that's low maintenance. So I thought of, I just got a hole in my sock, and I was Padrecito.
Oh, jeez.
You could see my toe.
Oh, no.
It was great.
You should be more ashamed of that than you are.
No. That's worse than the Goodwill.
I don't think so.
I think the Goodwill is worse.
Yeah, that was bad. When I was, a couple years ago, maybe 2019, when I was at K-State, I didn't have anything. It's Halloween night. I'm not a Halloween guy. And I know she listens to the podcast. Cassie Fitzgerald was in Manhattan driving through or something like that. So I asked for her help, and we came up with that I would be a spiritual father. Mm-hmm. So I was going to be a ghost that told dad jokes. So we went to Walmart and then cut little eyes out of this just white sheet. And I just, like, walked around this party. Ooh. And told dad jokes in a ghost voice. But I couldn't see, so I kept running into people, and it was super hot. And so...
Did you take the sheet back to Walmart after you were done with it?
I can't believe you narked out that story.
These are true confessions here.
True confessions.
My, like, childhood best costume, and I was probably, I don't know, first grade, kindergarten, second grade, and that, but Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original movie, had just come out, so, you know, that was the thing. I mean, that's still the thing. It's a solid movie. It holds up. Watch it. And so my older brothers helped me make a Shredder costume.
Ooh.
So, like, I had, you know, one of those, it was all duct tape and cardboard, but so, you know, pajamas and a fireman's hat, but everything was covered in duct tape with these spikes coming off of it. And I just thought it was the coolest costume to this day. Like, I would love to see a picture of it. We didn't take pictures as a family, so I don't know what I look like. I would love to see if it holds up in my memory, if it was actually...
Yeah, or
if
it's probably just, best you don't have a photo. Yeah,
right. There's some sad kid with half a box duct tape to him saying, I'm Shredder.
But, yeah, I'm sure it was just the Julius Caesar one that you got buried growing up.
Well, see, that was the other thing. Like, I grew up in the country, so there was, like, no neighborhood walking around. So part of the happy memory of that is my oldest brother, Jake, would, like, drive me around for trick-or-treating because it was, you know, half a mile to one house to another. And so I'm in my Shredder costume, wearing his Camaro, and just, you know, tearing down the dirt roads as Shredder would, going to all the neighbors for it. And they give you lots of candy because only three kids are going to show up on their doorstep that whole night. So it's a great experience going trick-or-treating in the country as Shredder.
Our roommate, Zach Capehart, when we were in college, his go-to Halloween costume was he would put on a Christmas sweater, like the most basic Christmas sweater, and he would be guy at a Christmas party. And it killed. I thought that was so funny. That was very Zach Capehart energy. Our roommate in college, not Catholic, was not, in our experience, terribly religious, He has two roommates became priests. Wow. And so he says he is the greatest vocation director of all time.
We should get him on the podcast sometime.
We do need to interview Zach about
season two.
That would be so
great. Season two, bring him in. I want to know more stories about...
No, you do. The early years.
The early years. Well, I remember also, like, now as an adult, I always feel a little torn because I like the idea of Halloween. It's still kind of a fun day. In fact, one of the times I felt the oldest in my life recently is I was on a seminary visit. Bishop and I travel in the fall to visit the theologates, and we were at one, and it was Halloween night because, you know, doesn't matter for our schedule. It's like we had the next morning a 5:30 a.m. flight out, so it's a Friday night Halloween, and I'm in bed at 9 o'clock. I'm like, something's gone wrong with my life. This is not how it's meant to be. But especially now as an adult, you know, because I feel torn because Halloween's, everyone's making a big deal out of it. And I like some of the Halloween stuff, but November 1st is the day, All Saints Day. And so like, when am I celebrating? What am I focusing on? That's always hard. And then you got November 2nd, which kind of gets lost in the shovel, except for apparently for St. Odilus.
Odilo of Cluny.
Man.
One of my absolute favorites.
You got it tattooed on your arm.
Yeah, of course. It says the Dillo. Cut that out. I don't know what that means. The Dillo. That'd be a cool bar name that was only open on All Souls Day. I don't know. Let's move this on. We're spitballing here. A bar. An All Souls themed bar is a cool idea. And you have to say a Hail Mary for the poor souls in purgatory every time you order a drink.
I'm having trouble breathing over here.
Is that a good idea?
That's the stupidest idea I've ever heard.
You just got to throw all the ideas out there. And at some point, you'll get a good
and
one.
And then that's where you can have masses offered.
I can't read my notes because my eyes are tearing up.
Yeah. You could have masses offered, but no, at the local parishes, but there would just be like a station where you could have masses offered. It would encourage the laity to have masses offered for the faithful, Garrett, which is a good thing for people to have masses offered for their deceased loved ones. Because, as St. Thomas Aquinas says, what binds us all in this life and the next is charity. So the sacrament of charity is the most efficacious thing one
I
can
like
do.
How you're going all serious.
Is that
going to
be the quote at the bar? Is that going to be the quote over the door?
We've gone off the rails on a Wednesday afternoon.
Come to the Dillo Bar to learn about St.
No
Thomas
one's to blame,
Aquinas.
But
no one's. I feel there is someone to blame in this scenario. I feel it's pretty clear who's to blame.
Let's tighten it up.
Okay.
But I'm keeping this as a good idea for moving forward.
So I was working for my segue there, which is shot to pieces now. But, you know, November 2nd being All Souls Day also reminds us, you know, the idea that not everyone gets in right away into heaven. You know, you sometimes got to work through it, which is actually the topic I want to talk about as our main topic today is not everyone gets in. Not heaven, talking about seminary, although it's true about heaven as well. But talking about seminary, I think there's a lot of guys out there, or a lot of people out there, I should say, in the church that just assumes that any time a man applies for seminary, it's a done deal. He's automatically gets in, and that it's not the case. Every year, there's some guys that, you know, start the application process for whatever reason, they don't get in, or something comes up and we realize there's more work to be done before they're ready for seminary. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about today about that idea that not everyone gets into seminary. It's not just an open door to walk through. And so I think maybe one of the places we can start in that concept is a recognition that one of the first things I always say to a guy when he begins the application process is in order for a man to enter seminary, it takes two yeses. It takes a yes from the man that this is something he wants to do. He feels the Lord is calling him, but it also takes a yes from the church, and that together they are discerning whether priesthood should be appropriate or seminary should be appropriate for this man. So I don't know if that was ever explained to you guys when you were in seminary going through the application process, but it's a reality that sometimes surprises guys when they first walk into the office.
Yeah, I don't think I'd heard that until I got to seminary. And then really not until I remember getting just a little booklet called Discernment Within the Heart of the Church, or Discerning with the Church. What's Monsignor's?
I don't know the title of it, but it's Monsignor Shea, who's excellent.
Yeah.
I've ever seen that.
Yeah, at the University of Mary. And it just kind of opened my eyes to that reality and helped me understand that's a good thing. Like, the church is actually supporting me and helping me know myself and my vocation. And it's not like I just have to get to a bar, and if I'm a good enough Christian, then all right, yep, you passed the things. No, the church is just helping me to know myself. That was the way that I remember experiencing it.
Well, and we'll talk about this on a later pod, but when, you know, telling people that you're going to seminary, well, I told people I was going to seminary when I decided I was going to go to seminary. And now in retrospect, that was a very foolish thing to do, and it all worked out. But now I realize that's not quite how it works. I did just assume if you decide you're going to seminary, you're in for seminary. And so, no, that was not something, I don't even remember when I first maybe realized it, probably around the same time Gare did, that we're in seminary, that this is a mutual discernment between the two. I think there's something with this purgatory thing that we're talking about, that, not to get too cute with it, but okay, can I earn going to heaven? No. Mm-hmm. Are there some things that I need to be living in to arrive at that space? Okay. And with heaven, sacrament of grace, and relation, those types of things. And even with moving from purgatory, cutting it off of attachments, unconfessed sins, those types of things. Okay. Maybe something similar with the priesthood. Do I have to be good enough? Like, okay, I'm a good enough person to become a priest. No, that's not the case. But there are some things that I do need to kind of be living in and discerning with, and some, not like bars I have to reach, although we kind of talked about some of that kind of stuff, for that to be an appropriate next step.
Right. Because if you're going to step into seminary, it's an intensive time of growth, and you've got to be ready for it. And sometimes there's some things that may bar your readiness for that have to be worked on. And so that's where I see it in kind of analogous what you're talking about with purgatory is, you know, sometimes a guy will come into the office and he's a good man, and seminary could be in the future, but he's got to work on a few things first before his heart will be fully ready to receive all that the Lord wants to give him, or before he will be able to enter into all that the seminary is going to ask for him. There's some things that have to be done first. And sometimes, and we talked about this in a podcast early on, I think, sometimes there's just bad discernment. And okay, yeah, you know, that's not what's going on here. And that's where the church is meant to be helpful in stepping in and saying, you're not figuring this out by yourself. And maybe you're looking at the wrong pieces here. Let's look at this from a wider lens. And okay, yeah, maybe your discernment wasn't really at the heart of listening to the Lord, but was maybe listening to some other thing in your mind or in your life that you felt you had to do.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of a soapbox I get on sometimes in confirmation classes, that in our day and age especially, it's like really individualistic. I feel like kids come to confirmation, it's like, I'm here to figure out if I want to be Catholic. And so like, teach me the stuff let me see if I agree. And that's not what confirmation prep is. It should be more of this almost like mutual discernment. You're already, if you're baptized, you're Catholic till you're dead. You know, I mean, like you're not getting un-Catholic. But the church is here with 2,000 years of wisdom and saints in this community that has welcomed you in, and hopefully an ideal parish situation has known you since you're a kid and is going to say, these are the gifts we see in you in your confirmation. You're supposed to be sent out with these gifts for our mission. And so it's not just this, I decided this thing, and so now I come to the church and say, give me this sacrament. And so something similar there.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
But we've built up that habit even with some other sacraments. Huh. And so I can see where that mentality can come in, that it's more of a mutual discernment with the church.
I think that's a great point. I hadn't thought about it from that way, but yeah, you're absolutely right. And in the spirit of that mutual discernment, the other side of the coin that we want to avoid, that I was almost hesitant to bring up this topic because I don't want guys saying, oh, not everyone gets in, I better present someone I'm not, and I'm going to hide some of these other problems. Okay, that's actually not going to help anything, because it's a joint discernment. The church needs to know you well as well. And so one of the questions I always ask a guy when he comes into the office to start the application, one of the last things I ask him on the very first meeting is, are there any deal breakers? Are there anything that is in the back of your mind that you're thinking, if Father finds out about this, then seminary's over? And I tell him, you know, sometimes those things actually are deal breakers. And if it is, it's better to get it out on the table now, because it's going to come out in some way, some fashion. Sooner the better. Let's talk about it. Sometimes it's not a deal breaker. You know, sometimes guys get something in their head like, oh, this is a huge thing. And no, it's a problem, but we can work with that. Sometimes it is a deal breaker, but it can be fixed if we know about it. And so just, again, part of that mutual discernment is that I'm going to be honest with who I am. I'm going to be, and I respect those guys when I throw that question, are there any deal breakers? And if they have anything to say after that, it's usually not a good thing. It's something they're worried about or there's something they're concerned about. And it takes a lot of courage to say, well, I am a little concerned about this, or I've struggled with this, or this happened once, or whatever it is. And the courage it takes to place that on the table, to trust the church, to trust me to be able to discern with them, I have a great respect for that. And I'm a big believer in, if a guy can articulate a problem or a struggle, we're a good way of being able to solve that. If you can actually say, hey, I'm open about this, I'm honest about that, that gives a lot of hope for fixing it. So I don't want guys to hear this idea that not everyone gets in and think, okay, well, I got to hide things. It's the opposite. You got to bring everything forward so the church can, in this mutual discernment, work with you for your good and the good of the church. And so just the importance of then knowing this reality, but still being honest and bringing things forward.
So I think that for your good is an important part of this. Because if I'm called to be a priest, okay, then I want the church involved in that process, and that's going to confirm and encourage me. And if I'm not called to be a priest and I try to become a priest, I'm not going to be as fully happy as I'm able to be. So why would I not want other parties involved? Mm-hmm. If I'm feeling like I just need to deal and get by and things like that, okay, there's something maybe a little weird going on here, because the church is trying to find my highest level of happiness and real happiness, like deep abiding happiness. And so if that's through the priesthood, excellent. But if the church notices that that's not where I'm going to be most successful in the biggest sense of that word, then I should be grateful for that opportunity. You know, they talk about with hiring and firing, when you let someone go, I'm allowing you to pursue better opportunities elsewhere. And you laugh at that when I hear that. I'm like, okay, is that really what you're doing? With this, that is what's happening. If a guy moves on from seminary, maybe at the behest of the seminary, we just need to take a look at some things, or this doesn't quite fit, I have to believe the Lord is offering me something better elsewhere and a level of happiness maybe somewhere else, or to focus on some things so that when I return, I can fully enter into the happiness and the gift that the Lord perhaps wants to give me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. That is key. Sometimes when I'm going to have a hard discussion with a seminarian, one of the things I want to reiterate with them is that the good of the man and the good of the church in the truest sense are always going to be the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It may not feel like that in the moment, but if we're pursuing the true good of the church and the true good of the man, they're going to be the same thing. God's not going to play games like, well, you'd probably be better off as a priest, but the church's going to be better off if you're not a priest. It doesn't work that way. God doesn't call those things into existence.
This is an image I use in marriage a lot, but when I was writing my thesis, so I wrote my thesis on three chapters in the book of Isaiah and Pope Benedict's thoughts on them and Old Testament in general reading. And it was 130 pages.
Please tell us a lot more about
unfathomably
in next episode, he will read
incredibly boring. A lot of Hebrew. And I've shared that I like Hebrew and things like that. Okay. I had this Benedictine advisor, Father Lawrence Kriegshauser. Kriegshauser, when he was reading my thesis, often was merciless. At one point, he has crossed out so many things in my thesis, and one page he writes at the top, this is a pretty good page because it's mostly quotes from other people. And
that's brutal.
Okay, so we go through that process, and I eventually get to the end, and when I'm defending it, I have full confidence. I'm so confident in this because I didn't just sneak it by. I didn't just, hey, who's going to care the least about this? No, I was honest about these things. I presented them. They got addressed and checked and sanded down. So not only do I think it's good, which I always kind of thought it was good. I don't know. I wouldn't have written it if I didn't think it was. But another has been involved in the process. And so there's energy and confidence. I think marriage prep has that element of it too, because during a marriage prep, again, we're not looking for red flags, but we are kind of talking and conversing and things like that. So then when you stand up there as a couple in front of the priest and God and people, okay, not only do we think this makes sense, but even the church has been a part of it too. And so we can give confidence there. Mm-hmm. So ecclesial discernment helps the man have greater confidence that it wasn't just me trying to think through this and deciding that I was supposed to be a priest. I find that to be a little helpful.
And even a no is, as you're saying, a good is good news. Yes. Even if it's you don't get in. I mean, I was talking with a young woman yesterday. It's kind of, I don't know if it's a similar situation. She thought she was going to get engaged pretty soon with her boyfriend, and then he broke up with her, just saying he doesn't even maybe see himself ever getting married. And there was just all this stuff that they'd never really known or gotten into. And I was just trying to get her to that place of like, this is actually a good moment. Now, maybe you guys are going to continue a friendship or like figure out obviously if he has no desire for marriage, there's something off there. Maybe that can be healed. But you would not have wanted to get married without that coming to light and without receiving this no. And so, yeah, I'm sure, you know, she's in tears and that hurts in the moment, but there's a goodness there just to bring everything into the light. And then the church together, you know, if you're a seminarian, just bringing everything into the light and the church, you give a mutual yes. And there's much more power and confidence.
Mm-hmm. And I will say, you know, from the vocation perspective, in those scenarios, the goal and the hope, and, you know, there are people that do it obviously better, but the hope is to help to bring that person. When a guy comes into my office and there's maybe an issue that seminary doesn't make sense, it's not like I just say, nope, you're not in, move along. Because I respect them enough to come in, and I appreciate the courage that takes, and that they are discerning God's will, and that this is a joint discernment. My goal is to help them to come to that realization that either seminary is not right now, or no, maybe, Father, do I need to work on this first? Or part of the hope and the goal when a guy comes in is it's not just going to be slam the door in your face, but let's understand why and how is the Lord working through it. And so I've had the privilege to know some guys that were told no for entering seminary, but have gone on to live very good, holy lives that contribute. And the moment, I think it hurt when they were told that this isn't the best plan for them, but they can see it now as they've gotten older and they look back and like, oh no, that was a good call. And I feel good where I'm at in life. And similar with, this isn't 100% across the board, but occasionally I have to have a hard conversation with a guy in seminary and help him realize that seminaries no longer make sense for the place for him to continue to be, that he needs to step out of seminary. And many of those guys, there's some that carry some anger about that, but some also can be able to see, nope, this was part of our joint discernment, and they go on and they live good and holy lives. And that's, again, trying to discern what is best for the man and best for the church is the same thing.
This gets into some obedience. Maximilian Kolbe talked about this. Like, unless it's being asked to do something immoral, the directive and the will of your superior is the will of God in your life. And again, talk to somebody about that. If somebody's asking you to do something wrong, that's a different thing. Okay. But in this circumstance, Mother Church gives me a decision or a suggestion or something like that. Do I believe that the will of God is working through Mother Church? Do I believe then that that is God's will for me? I thought I knew God's will, but in obedience, I'm hearing another presentation of the Lord's will. There could even be some freedom there. Mm-hmm. Because when I think I have to figure out God's will, okay, no, but this has been presented to me. And that's where obedience, and we've talked about this, how obedience is freeing in the priesthood. Even in this part, there could be some freedom that comes from that. But I got to be honest. I need to be honest fully to make sure that that can take place. But
and that's one of the beautiful things I got to see some guys when they get further along in seminary and theology, and okay, they're struggling with something. And at least in their mind, the evil ones sometimes were like, if you tell Father, you tell your formator, this could mean the end of seminary. And they've been able to come forward, Father, this is what's going on. And I trust the Lord and the church. And if this means I need to step out of seminary, okay. And if there, we can work through this. And different scenarios may call for different things, but just the fact that they have reached that relationship with the Lord and with the church, that they can say, I'm going to be totally honest and I'm going to trust you to discern with me for the good of the church and for my good together. And that I know what I want this end result to be, but I trust you enough that whatever the end result be is going to be for my good. And I've known some guys that have come to that place, and I just greatly admire them and have tremendous hope for how the Lord can work in their life, because they have moved to such a place of honesty and trust in their relationship with God that it's inspiring for me to hear from them and to see a great gift. Well, I think that's probably it about today. I think if there's any main takeaways, it's Father Drew is opening an All Souls Day only bar called the Dillo Bar.
Join us this Saturday at the Dillo.
Where everyone knows the name of your beloved deceased.
That's great. Think about this. We could get the startup money.
Don't think about it.
Okay, we're getting into some bad territory here of like, But you have to come into the barn, you have to pray for a beloved deceased, and you get a name of a beloved deceased that you have to pray for. And again, so maybe this
what
is not
could go wrong.
Maybe I it's can't a coffee keep a shop. Straight face.
Maybe it's a coffee shop, okay? The Odilo's. That'd be a classy coffee shop.
No,
and when
it wouldn't.
You walk in, you get the name of someone to pray for the rest of your time having that coffee. All proceeds will go to masses to celebrate for the faithful departed.
I have not laughed that hard about something that stupid in I don't know how long.
Well, we need to hang out more. Because I got 100 of these ideas.
I have 100 ideas every day. Every once in a while, one's good.
I had a whole pitch yesterday about a priest who becomes a barber and to evangelize. Like a priest becomes a barber and to evangelize and hear confessions and things like that. But then it turned into a Hallmark movie of...
They always do.
It always turns into like he met a guy and a girl and how does he get them together? But yeah.
Okay. These genuinely sound like, honestly, these are the conversations we have at dinner time most of the time at the House of Formation.
Smell like your sheep.
Last night we were discussing of what states, you were talking about like the city of Texarkana and Canorado. Yeah. And so we were trying to come up with the best side-by-side saint city names. And
that's funny.
We had some good ones in there. But yeah, these are the type of conversation. If you come to the House of Formation, brace yourself. Yeah. This is everyday conversation. So
if you want to be an upfront investor in the Dillo or Odillo's coffee, you call me and we'll make it happen.
Well, thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. The final word today goes to Father Garrett.
This is from Mother Teresa. People are hungry for God. What a terrible meeting it would be with our neighbor if we gave them only ourselves.
See you next week.